The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
150 years, the Kentucky Derby's been an icon of racing and luxury. The first Saturday in May, the world turns its attention here.
They're off in the Kentucky Derby. And they're into the stretch. Oh, my goodness.
This is the place to be.
The 150th Kentucky Derby, Saturday, May 4th, on NBC and Peacock.
When the Chiefs are interested in you, it's like, all right, you gotta take a look at that. I mean, of course, you know, I can go get, you know, some money, you know, at other places. But at the end of the day, you know, it's about winning. It's about, you know, what I want.
I mean, the receivers have been getting paid this offseason. Do you feel like the Chiefs offer you the most money?
I'm a football player. You know, I want to play football. I want to win. I want to be a part of the winning. And that's why I'm here.
In other words, the answer is no. I didn't get a major financial offer, so I'll go somewhere where I can maybe win a Super Bowl ring instead, and that's fine. Not everybody's going to get a ton of money. The receiver market this year for veteran free agents has not been great. He waited. Any of the deals that don't get done in the first few days, they're not what the guy wanted.
Right.
He's settling for something less than he wanted. But if you're going to land anywhere, why not land in the place where your skill set helps the offense and you've got one of the best quarterbacks that ever put a football in his hands in Patrick Mahomes. So it's a win for the Chiefs. 1 year, up to $11 million. Up to is always doing a lot of work this time of year. We don't know what the base value is, or at least if we do, I haven't seen it yet. And Hollywood Brown gets his landing spot. And if he has a big year, do it again next year. That's why these guys do one-year deals. You have a big year, and maybe you cash in next year, like Baker Mayfield did. One-year deal for $4 million last year, three-year, $100 million deal this year.
Yeah, it's really a perfect fit for both sides there. Yeah, Hollywood Brown was not going to get what he wanted on the open market. Got a little chunk of change there. And he's going to be in a spot and a team where, you know, I think for the first time in his career, he's really going to get to show his skill set. You know, one, they have a need there for that kind of guy, a speed guy who can, you know, beat people deep or make plays with the ball in their hand underneath, like you're watching right here. There's nobody there right now that totally fits that mold. Valdez-Scantling was their speed guy. He's no longer there. Hollywood Brown's an upgrade as far as an all-around receiver from Valdez-Scantling. And, yeah, you go to Kansas City to what you're saying, to what Hollywood said. You go there, you're going to get to play in some big games, right? You put up some good stats, all of that. All of a sudden, everybody starts to realize, wow, Hollywood's damn good. And then next year, hopefully he gets a three-year deal that's closer to a market type of money here. But, yeah, good for Hollywood, and I think it's good for Kansas City.
Yeah, absolutely.
See this little recruiting pitch right here by Andy Reid?
There it is. Yes. Yes. Think red today, KC red with diamonds.
I like it.
I like that. Lucy in the sky with diamonds, KC red in the sky with diamonds. By the way, since we're here, I don't know if this is on the topic rundown later in the show because I never look ahead more than in one segment. Sorry, guys. But, how do you prep? People say to me, how do you prep for the show? It's like, I don't prep for the show. My life is prep for the show. Like, everything I do when the show isn't on is calculated toward being ready for the next show because it's covering everything that's happening in the NFL. Mark Donovan, the Chiefs president, said last week that they've got this vote coming up on April 2nd, and usually public votes aimed at getting taxpayer money for stadium construction and renovation don't do well, and they've got a commercial with Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce and Andy Reid trying to push people to go out and vote for this extension of a sales tax that would pay for the renovation. Mark Donovan, the president of the team, said if they don't get what they want, they might leave Kansas City. Now, they might still stay in the area, but they'll leave Kansas City, Missouri. They might go to Kansas City, Kansas, but it's a pretty significant development that currently the reigning dynasty of dynasties in the NFL, the best team that we've seen since the Patriots won 6 in 20 years, could be leaving its stadium and leaving the city where it's playing its game.
Yeah, kind of crazy. It is. I mean, it's rare, I feel like, to hear like a team with that type of success and kind of entrenched in the DNA of a city and a state like that to even threaten or bring that up. I mean, it's an AFC West thing, I guess. It's the shades of the 80s Raiders and them not being able to do it. I mean, it is. I don't think it'll happen, of course, and I feel like Andy Reid and, you know, Mahomes and Kelce on the commercial and what Kansas City's doing right now, it'll get enough people out there to vote to get it done. But, yeah, it's still rare and odd that we're even at this point with a franchise like this.
And to come out and say that out loud, for Mark Donovan to say that out loud, because usually it's just implied.
Yeah.
It's implied. If you don't give us what we want, we have to explore our options. Well, one of our options would have to be leaving Kansas City. I mean, he said that. They asked him, well, what are your options? Do your options include leaving Kansas City? Well, it would have to. Well, okay. We'll see how it plays out. All right. Chiefs beat the 49ers in the Super Bowl. There was an issue for the 49ers that happened last year, 2022. They're calling it a clerical payroll error. And maybe it was. They're still getting whacked for it. They had an issue with how they allocated and reported what they paid to players. It's all subject to the salary cap. And the NFL statement says there were no salary cap violations. And it was all done with no ill intent. But because they did something by way of miscalculating what they paid to players in 2022, they are losing a 2025 fifth-round pick, and their 2024 fourth-round pick is being moved from its current spot at number 131 to the end of the round after the compensatory picks. It's only falling four spots, but still, that's this year's punishment. Four spots can mean a lot in
right,
the draft.
Right.
You got your eye on somebody at 131,
exactly,
and that guy's gone by the time you get to 135. So apparently this is just standard review, standard audit. I don't know that there was anything that happened that caused the NFL to look into this. You know, we don't always get the backstory when these things happen. Maybe there's more to it, but it's being presented as nothing to see here other than what we're showing you. Clerical payroll error. 49ers take responsibility. They call it a clerical payroll error. At no time did we mislead or otherwise deceive the league or gain a competitive advantage in connection with the payroll mistake. So I'm willing to accept, in the absence of anything tangible, that that's what happened. It's still a hell of a punishment. If it didn't create a salary cap violation, and if there was no intent to deceive,
that's right.
How do you lose a fifth-round draft pick for it?
Well,
isn't a fifth-round draft pick what the Falcons lost for deliberately pumping in fake crowd noise?
Yeah, I believe so, right? And, you know, I do believe the 49ers and the NFL. I mean, again, I don't think the NFL is that good if it was that big of a, you know, an egregious mistake where we would have heard about it, people like you and me, right? But
What would we have? We didn't know anything about the Eagles-Cardinals tampering stuff last year until 5 minutes before the draft started. We didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah, well, I don't know. There was things out there about funny business during that time before that.
We didn't know there was a tampering investigation.
Right. No, we did not realize it was that.
Cardinals were getting whacked.
Now, we did know that there was issues there and that there was unhappiness. We did know that. But no, we didn't know all the details there. But hey, I don't know, and I'm gonna take them at their word, like you said. Either way, I think either way, though, to what you're saying, right? They gotta be somewhat hardline, like strong here in the NFL, even though the 49ers didn't mean to do it or whatever, clerical error, or whatever. They can't take the chance of teams trying to pull off this crap and doing something, you know, egregiously strong or aggressive to help their team out. So I think they got to draw a line here in the concrete, right? And go, nope. You know, no matter what, even though you didn't mean to do this, this is one where we got to make sure nobody else in the NFL even thinks about doing this. And I think that's probably where the NFL's minds are in this one.
Well, if you don't punish the accident, you're going to have other people who do it on purpose.
And go, it's an accident. Exactly. That's my point. Right. Thank you for, that's the way to say it.
Strict
that's
liability.
Right.
Strict liability. No, drawing no line in the concrete or the sand or whatever it is you would properly draw a line in. And now you can draw a line in the concrete before it sets. Once it sets, it's kind of hard to draw the line in it. I'm looking at the item from March 30 of 2015. 2015, before the 2015 draft, the punishment for the Falcons for using fake crowd noise was to lose a 2016 fifth-round pick. Same punishment plus reduction in their fourth-round pick. So the net punishment for an accidental clerical payroll error is worse than deliberately pumping in fake crowd noise. Now, some would say the Falcons got off easy because Rich McKay's got, you know, there's a little Game of Thrones going on. There's different political heft that people have. Rich McKay is the chair of the competition committee. That's why people think they're going to look the other way on the blatant Kirk Cousins tampering because of Rich McKay's juice in league circles. And Chris, hadn't thought of it until we were talking about it just now. How in the world do the 49ers, for a mistake, get a bigger punishment than the Falcons got for deliberately piping in fake crowd noise?
I think the 49ers' mistake is still more egregious when you the guidelines, the bylaws of the NFL. I think that
didn't violate the salary
even though,
cap.
You know,
they weren't in excess of the cap.
But the maybe the consequences and the things you explained of, you know, where it could go and what teams might do, to me, is probably where the NFL is a little bit more worried about that. You know, in a lot of ways, listen, there's people in the NFL, too, that go, Atlanta lost a fifth-round pick for what? Doing something that the Colts did in the RCA Dome or Minnesota did in that dome forever?
Proven.
Well, I know, but that was kind of always thought. It's just the
car. I think Fox News may want to employ you if you're an expert in whataboutism.
Well,
doesn't matter. They got busted.
Okay.
They got busted.
Yeah.
And they got less of a punishment for deliberately piping in fake crowd noise. Deliberately. Remember there was a time when they'd throw a flag if the crowd was naturally too loud? For deliberately piping in fake crowd noise.
Right.
They got a fifth-round pick. My point is the 49ers, for an accident, got hit harder than the Falcons did for deliberately creating a competitive advantage at home games by making it louder than it naturally was. There's something wrong with that picture to me.
I just think the thing that the 49ers did is a more serious avenue, and that's where the NFL is scared of that. What that message, like you said, could send to other teams. And I think that's the big thing there. And I think that's where, they didn't mean to.
But if it doesn't put you over the cap, it doesn't matter.
I know.
If it doesn't put you over the cap, it doesn't matter.
I got you. But I guess that, like you said, they don't want teams going, oh, we didn't know we did that. Oh, man, we won the Super Bowl and we were a little over the cap and we gave that guy, oh, shucks, we didn't mean to, all right? Oh, damn. So they're stopping that right there. And I think that's, you know, I understand it.
I'll say this.
Yeah.
I'll say this. Even if they didn't go over the salary cap, under the current CBA, your extra space gets carried over. So even if they didn't, and this is where I just, it makes me wonder, is there more to this story? Because saying it didn't put them over the cap, like it worked on me. Oh, it's no big deal. Oh, well, why are we worried about it? It didn't put them over the cap. But now that we talk about it, hang on a second. And I don't know what the number was. Let's say it was $1 million. Let's say it was $1 million counting error. And when you got a $200+ million salary cap, maybe that happens. That extra $1 million that wasn't properly accounted for reduces the money that would have been carried over to the next year's cap. So they end up with more cap space. So even if you don't go over the cap that year, you're in an easier position to comply with the cap the next year because you get more money that carries over to that cap because it wasn't properly accounted for. So regardless, it's a competitive edge. It's something that keeps all teams equal, just like pumping in fake crowd noise. I just feel like if you've caught somebody deliberately doing something, the punishment should be worse than if it's accidental. And it makes me wonder how accidental it really was. I guess that brings it all home. It makes me wonder how accidental it really was.
Yep. No, I hear you there. I know what you mean there. I think it's, you know, again, I think it's just, hey, they want to make sure nobody goes down this road of trying to BS their way with an accounting error or anything like that. You know, I think that's, again, where you talk about your gambling and all that and everything there. They got to make sure things look, you know, status quo. Everything's in line. You know, no teams are getting over on us or anything like that. I would imagine, again, I don't know. I would imagine those are the things and concerns of 345 Park Ave there.
Yeah. You don't want to give teams, as you would call, the get out of free jail card.
Exactly.
That they
it's
can
a
just
very
say,
big card.
Sorry, we
right.
made a mistake.
Right.
It's the old. It's the old Steve Martin bit on how to get rich without paying taxes. Two words. I forgot. Although,
right.
I forgot. Oh, Steve never forgot to pay his. He should maybe talk to Wesley Snipes about what happens when you forget to pay your taxes. All right, let's take a break. When we return, is Kirk Cousins paying up to wear number 8 in Atlanta, or will he be wearing a different number? We have an answer, and I think there's a postscript to it that probably explains why.
He's a businessman. He's not paying for that.
Right,
I don't think it is. I don't think he'll do it.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
150 years, the Kentucky Derby's been an icon of racing and luxury. The first Saturday in May, the world turns its attention here.
They're off in the Kentucky Derby. And they're into the stretch. Oh, my goodness.
This is the place to be.
The 150th Kentucky Derby, Saturday, May 4th, on NBC and Peacock.
Atlanta Falcons quarterback Kirk Cousins will be wearing, moving forward,
wow,
number 18.
Double digits.
Not number 8. 18. He did wear 12.
12 in college,
for a
right?
little while in
yeah.
Washington.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
No,
8 at Michigan State.
I think it was
State.
8.
I think you're right.
Yeah. And then Rex Grossman was wearing 8 when he was drafted 4th round by
right.
Washington in 2012. And then once Grossman was gone, he switched to 8. Look, and this is funny because the week before free agency, one of the things we heard, I didn't verify it,
yeah.
but I blurted it out when I was on with McAfee and company. I said, you know, the connections and the preparations beyond finding a house, beyond finding a school. I've also been told, and I haven't verified this yet, that Kyle Pitts and Kirk Cousins are already talking about who's going to wear number 8. And Pitts loudly denied it on X. And then last Wednesday, and, you know, I don't know if they shot him full of sodium pentothal before his introductory press conference or what, but Cousins just blurts out that Pitts was the one player who led the charge in recruiting him, and it went back a few weeks before he agreed to terms. So clearly they were talking about who's going to wear number 8. And at the end of the day, and Cousins said this last week too, the league might have something to say about it. I think no one wanted to write the check for the existing inventory of Kyle Pitts jerseys with number 8 on them. That's an issue. We've seen it from time to time, most notably when they changed the numbering system. Dalvin Cook, I remember this one vividly. He wanted to go from 33 to 4. He wore 4 at Florida State. But if he went right away from 33 to 4, he was going to have to pay for the entire amount at retail of unsold Dalvin Cook jerseys with number 33 on them. So he waited a year. And after a year, it was okay. So I don't know if they're going to do this next year. Is it a one-year thing? I don't know. But my guess is this is beyond whatever Kirk Cousins was going to pay to the Kyle Pitts Foundation or otherwise surrender to wear number 8.
Definitely.
This is about who was going to pay, I believe. And I've asked the league what it would have cost and if that was an impediment, and they haven't answered me yet. So it forces me to ask again and again until I forget to ask again. But I have a feeling nobody was going to write that check for all the Kyle Pitts number 8 jerseys that are out there on the market.
No, I think you're exactly right. I think there's a certain time that has to be put out there to put the league on notice about the jersey number change and all of that. And, you know, you're right, the Dalvin Cook one. There was a few other ones, too, that were like that as well, where guys wanted to change, but they were going to have to write a check for $900,000 to get all the jerseys back retail, like you talked about. So, yeah, I would think that's ultimately what ended that conversation. Kirk Cousins might have been totally cool writing a check to Kyle Pitts, his foundation, or whatever else, but to do that and please the NFL was going to take a whole different chunk of change there, and I'm sure they weren't willing to go down that road there. So, yeah, number 18. It's going to be interesting watching him in number 18. A little different look from him, all right? I'm shocked he didn't go 12. Do they have a 12 on the roster right now? I don't remember one off.
Drake London.
Oh, Drake London.
Drake London 12?
No, I think he's 5. He's number 5, right? So,
5.
Yeah. And I didn't pull up their roster, but 18 and shades of Peyton Manning and that type of number. It'd be cool to see him.
There aren't many guys who have worn number 18 and had significant success in the NFL. And I'm looking at it now. Is it Cardale Hodge?
Yeah, it's Cardale Hodge, right. So he obviously didn't want to pay for – he didn't like 12 enough to pay for it. And he just said, all right, 18's there. But, yeah, I mean, you're right. 18, right? I mean, it's Archie and Peyton Manning. I mean, is there another 18 I'm missing through the
– Archie wore 8, I think. I think Ooh. Archie wore 8.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think he did wear 8. I think I'm wrong about that. Yeah, you're right. He wore 8 in college, too? That's where I wasn't sure. Maybe
Frank
that's where
Trpuka, Frank Trpuka wore number 18 for the Denver Broncos well enough that they retired it until Peyton Manning came along, and they unretired it for Peyton Manning. But so there is one former Broncos great who did enough in number 18 to get it retired, but there aren't many guys that have worn number 18 and had a high
Archie
level
did wear 18 in college, so I wasn't totally off there. Okay. It was 8 in the NFL, 18 right. in
Football
college.
Football historian. Charlie Joyner, but he wasn't a quarterback. How did Charlie Joyner get away with wearing number 18?
He must have been like a third-string quarterback or something like that.
Weird little quirks from time to time
right.
that defied the NFL's obsessive compulsive numbering rules. Like Devin Hester at number 23, he broke in as a defensive back.
Right.
Even though he was primarily a kick returner, and then when they moved him to receiver.
Keyshawn Johnson got to wear 19, right? Because all the numbers in the 80s were taken with the New York Jets. So he got to wear 19 when he got drafted by them.
And I think there was a weird thing, too, where if you were able to do it in the preseason, you could carry it over.
You could keep it for the regular season. Right.
But that ended within a year or two because Randy Moss went from 18 to 84 because he wore 18 in his rookie year preseason, same number that Justin Jefferson now wears. Roman Gabriel, thank you, Pete, wore number 18.
Okay.
I didn't know.
Yeah, another one.
I didn't know that. So, speaking of the Vikings and JJs, the Vikings reportedly will have a private workout with JJ McCarthy. That's where you go to him. You go to campus to have the private workout. The visit is just come to the facility and get to know everybody and walk around. The workout doesn't happen there. They have to go to him. So they're reportedly going to have a private workout. Kevin O'Connell, Kwesi Adofo-Mensah, and quarterback coaches Josh McCown and Grant Udinski will go to the pro day this Friday, and then they'll work him out at some point away from the prying eyes. The most notable Vikings private workout with a quarterback, I mentioned this the other day. I think it was Friday, Chris, when you were in your hammock with a pina colada and a big fat doobie.
Yep.
The Vikings took Teddy Bridgewater round one in 2014. He had a horrible pro day workout when he took off his gloves. He put the gloves back on for the private workout with the Vikings, and they fell in love with him because that horrible pro day workout almost took him out of round one altogether.
Yep.
The Vikings traded into number 32, I believe, with the Texans to get that pick in 2014 based on the private workout, and no one knows what a team thinks of a guy based upon the private workout.
No, that's right. But, I mean, J.J. McCarthy's a first-round quarterback. We know that. I mean, again, he's one of those where You just go, okay, he was in Michigan. It was an unfriendly quarterback offense. It wasn't about throwing the football, but, you know, don't get him messed up like we talk about all the time. You put him on some other college offenses and it would look a lot different. He can make every throw. He's got the pedigree. He's got, you know, the way that you want a quarterback to be as far as a leader, kind of humble, not looking to be a distraction, any of that. The arm is very strong. Right, it's up there with the strongest arms in the draft. In fact, I would say Caleb Williams is the only guy that I would sit here for sure and go, yes, his arm's stronger than J.J. McCarthy's. It's that strong. His ability to make plays off schedule are damn good. He's been playing pro football for Michigan anyways, managing game, playing that way. So he is ready. That is for sure. And like we talked about a lot last week, the pressure's on in Minnesota. The pressure's on Kwesi Adofo-Mensah for sure. You know, again, you let go a guy that's an established, really good starter, right? And now you got to find somebody here, beacon of hope, like we talk about, replacement, give the fan base something to look forward to the future. And I think that's why they're making aggressive moves, getting the 23rd pick, because they're feeling the heat and they know they got to replace Kirk Cousins with something substantial here.
The highest the Vikings have ever taken a quarterback in the draft was number 11, Dante Culpepper, in 1999. They took Christian Ponder at number 12 in 2012.
Yeah.
2011. Okay. Sorry. Teddy Bridgewater, number 32. Tommy Kramer, late 20s in 77. They've never gone higher than 11. They're currently at 11. They clearly are trying to move up. The question is, how high will they go and who will they target? And at the end of the day, whoever it is, and this gets back to the whole Caleb Williams, Archie Manning, Eli Manning, John Elway, Bo Jackson thing. Like, you, all right, and we talked about this yesterday. You got four teams at the top of the draft that all have defensive head coaches. So if the offensive coordinator you're assigned to work with does a great job with you and you play well, he's gone as a head coach and you got to start over again. You got lurking like a great white shark. Da-dun, da-dun. Here come the Vikings with Kevin O'Connell and all the things you say about his play design and play calling and what he did with Kirk Cousins, what he did with Nick Mullins, what he did with Josh Dobbs. You get him one of these top quarterbacks.
You sound like you're trying to talk to the Williams camp to try to make them not go to a division rival and get him on your team, all right?
I'm not doing anything. I'm stating facts. I'm stating facts. Yeah, hey, if my son was coming into the NFL right now at the quarterback position, and I'm looking at the wreckage of 2021 and looking what happened to all those guys who didn't have control over their fate and ended up in bad situations. Zach Wilson ended up in a bad situation with one of the most dysfunctional teams in football. Trey Lance never got a chance to get on the damn field, right? Yeah. Mac Jones with that mess in New England, with that disaster when Josh McDaniels worked great with Mac Jones, became a head coach again. Here comes Matt Patricia to be the are you kidding me? My career is now tied to a guy who's been a defensive coach his whole life, and it all fell apart for Mac Jones. If my son's coming to the NFL now, and I'm looking around at the available options, and I'm seeing Kevin O'Connell, and I look at what he did with Kirk Cousins, and what he did with Josh Dobbs, and what he did with Nick Mullins, hell yeah, I'm interested in that, in putting my son in the hands of that coach.
All right, but
versus
it's no guarantee.
An offensive coordinator.
You know,
I'm just.
Yeah, it's no guarantee. Like you said, Trey Lance is with the greatest offensive mind in the sport. He couldn't get on the field, he couldn't get it done. Right? So again, you got to.
But why?
Why?
Because they still were tied to Jimmy Garoppolo. They were still tied to Jimmy Garoppolo. For whatever reason, they thought they could do this shift after 1 year. Right? They thought they were going to get cute and do the Alex Smith, Patrick Mahomes thing.
No,
why didn't they just move on from Jimmy G and give it to Trey Lance from the get-go?
No, yeah. The bottom line is, you know, they misevaluated Trey Lance. Most of the NFL did. Most of the NFL, oh, he's undefeated at North Dakota State. Like, it's like, okay, yeah, but, I mean, he throws the ball 12 times a game, and they're way better than everybody in college football. That's where it went wrong. I hear you with your point there. But you're never going to have everything. As far as that. And I look at the Bears situation and go, damn, for a first pick in the draft, you're going to get drafted by that team? That's a damn good team to be first pick in the draft. It sets up. And then you get to add to it a pick number 9 to go along with it and have another star. I think there's way more positives. He can be Michael Jordan. in Chicago. He really can. It's a lot of the same ways. They were starving for something to save their basketball life there. They're starving for a quarterback in Chicago. He could save it. They got the talent around him that way. You know, yeah, the offensive coordinator thing, I get you, right? But, you know, nothing's going to be perfect all the time, and this one's a situation
I understand. Yeah. Chris, I understand nothing's going to be perfect, but you understand Luke Getsy will be – not Luke Getsy, he's already gone. Shane Waldron will be gone if it works with Caleb Williams, and they got to find somebody else. And if it works for that guy, that guy's going to be gone. Until they have an offensive head coach, it's going to be a revolving door at offensive coordinator if Caleb Williams becomes a star. It's going to become the launching pad to make head coaches all throughout the league. Every offensive mind is going to want to go be the next offensive coordinator, and that's the only hope for Caleb Williams at that point, that it's so attractive that you want the best talent to come coach him for a year or two before he graduates to be a head coach. But if it's an offensive head coach, and I said yesterday when we first talked about this, Brian Daboll and the Giants, because they're in better striking distance and maybe the Bears would be more inclined to do that deal if Caleb Williams said, I want to play for the Giants. But you get tied to the hip with Brian Daboll, you get a Sean Payton, Drew Brees situation potentially. And we know what Daboll can do with a good quarterback. We saw it in Buffalo with Josh Allen. That's just my only point. I know you're never going to have everything, but I think as you rank your priorities, players come and go over the course of a 15-year career. I want to have a 15-year relationship with the head coach who's going to be there for my whole career, and we're going to get better and better and better together, and I don't have to worry about him leaving at some point because we got too good. I would prioritize that over the very transient, changeable, oh, I got a good receiver for now. Oh, I got a good defense for now. That's my point.
Yeah, I get you. I disagree with you. I disagree with you. The greatest team we've ever seen for 20 years had a defensive head coach. They were awesome. They worked out.
Well,
we're in a fad right now.
It was such a good defensive.
And we've gone too crazy where it's just like, oh, he worked for him. We're going to hire him as an offensive coach. Yeah. Oh, you know, it's got a little crazy that way. We're definitely in that fad. I hear you. There's some value there. But I don't totally agree with all that.
It's not a fad. It's reality. It's reality. The greatest defensive head coach who thought it was a good idea to make Matt Patricia his offensive coordinator.
Okay, he made a mistake.
He was drunk on his hubris.
One mistake. Right. I know. How about 10 AFC championships and 10 Super Bowl? Like, come on, Mike. Don't pick 1 year and then erase the other 19. Get out of here. Come on.
We got to take a break, but I know we disagree on this. I think without Brady, they don't win shit in New England. And Bill Belichick gets fired before he ever has a chance to get to a Super Bowl.
Yeah, that's the dumbest shit you've ever said in your life.
More PFT Live. Oh, I've said plenty dumber than that.
That's up there. They went 15-5 without him. I mean, 15-5.
I have a feeling.
The guy that couldn't even play in college football, they went 11-5. Like, it's insane. Come on, stop.
I have a feeling.
My thing would be if they had Aaron Rodgers, they would have won 12 championships. I don't know. What I mean, you tell me.
I've already gotten complaints.
Right.
I've already gotten complaints about your receiver rankings, and we haven't even talked about them on this show yet.
Oh, who'd you get them from?
Next year.
Who cares?
On PFT Live.
You're trying to hit home runs, okay? And DK Metcalf has a chance to be a home run hitter.
Well, it's CD Lamb. CeeDee Lamb is the best wide receiver in the draft for my money. He's just a baller. You know, he's the best in the draft with the ball in his hand. I just look at Justin Jefferson and I go, what's not to like about the guy? I mean, I don't really get it. You know, I don't understand why he's not getting more hype.
Can you believe that Boston College has got a receiver that's fast and going to be in the top of the draft?
He couldn't believe it. That's
Zay
why he
Flowers. Number Flowers. One receiver for me in the 2023 draft.
Some of Chris's draft rankings at the receiver position from past years. And, hey, I like the fact that you're willing to go against the popular thinking. And, look. So many of the people out there, and I'm not going to name names, but so many of the folks out there who do draft analysis and draft rankings aren't doing their own analysis. They're talking to scouts. They're talking to agents. They're influenced by scouts. They're influenced by agents. And they are trying to catch the wave as the wave is cresting. They're not making their own evaluation. They're trying to figure out where everyone else is, and then they... I don't want to say mimic it, but they craft a set of rankings based on information that they glean from others, not their own independent assessment. And that's where yours are different. This isn't, and I don't want to name names. I don't need to name names. Most of the people who rank people in the draft are doing it based upon information they get from the outside. You do it from the inside. You do it on your own. That's what makes yours different.
Thanks, man.
Now, I say all that.
Yeah.
I say all that.
Right.
As the positive. Here's the other side of it.
Right.
Hey, people, when you want to complain about his rankings, don't complain to me. They're
Send
not mine. Send
them to Florio, my baby. Email, send them there.
My email address, folks, I read every email I get. I respond to none of them. If you send me 100 and I don't respond, maybe you should get the message. This is not a pen pal service. This is not a message board. It's my personal email account. Do not complain to me about Chris's draft rankings. They're not mine. All right. I feel better. Malik Nabers, why don't you have Marvin Harrison Jr. at number one? Everybody's got Marvin Harrison Jr. at number one. This is the worst list I've ever seen. What's wrong with you? You don't know anything about football. You don't know if it's stuffed or blown up with air, or whatever this saying is.
Well,
why do you have Malik Nabers at number one?
Hey, well, I mean, one, because he deserves to be. He's awesome, Mike. He really is. You talk about a guy that where you go, wow, there's really not a weakness to his game. And I'll just play it like simple like this, right? He could be the best X receiver in the draft on the line, split him out by himself. He could be the best Z receiver who can motion around and doing that. He could be the best slot receiver in the draft. He's the best at everything, right? He's the best route runner in the draft. He rips the ball out of the air with his hands. He's physical, right? He's a burner, so he can beat you outside and go, hey, just go straight and I'll throw it 70 and it's a bomb, right? He can catch a slant and go 70, and he's got the best quickness and route running ability in the draft. He's a phenomenal football player. He's almost in a lot of ways, a lot like a little combination of Jamar Chase and Justin Jefferson together. Maybe not quite as explosive as Jamar Chase, but it's not far off, right? And then there's the Justin Jefferson, crafty, explosive, knows how to run, you know, routes and set people up that way. And that's where Malik Nabers is special, Mike. I think as we continue to go into this process, right, and more of the important evaluators are getting there, that you're going to see that Malik Nabers is going to be the number one receiver on most teams' board. In fact, when I released my rankings yesterday, I think we saw some people on social media, Danielle Jeremiah even being one of them, that made a comment going, Malik Nabers is number one receiver on a lot of teams' boards. He's really impressive, physical explosion, right, Mike? You know me. I'm into that kind of guy. I like route runners and all that, but you got to be able to catch a slant and get big-time yak or beat somebody or scare somebody with your pure speed. I'm a little sucker for that. Malik Nabers has got it all, Mike. He really does.
There's two ways guys rise up the board this time of year. One, the coaches have gotten involved and they said to the scouts, what the hell? Why don't you have this guy higher? This guy is the guy. Or the people in the draft industrial complex in the media are figuring out that they were wrong all along.
Right, right.
We were wrong to anoint Marvin Harrison Jr. all along, and now we're finding out what the teams really think, or they're glomming onto your rankings because they understand you did an independent analysis, so all of a sudden he's rising up on other boards because somebody sees you rise him up, so the ones who are basically compiling information and repackaging it as their own draft rankings are seeing what others do. And again, I hate to be that candid, and I haven't named names, but that's how the game is played. No. We've seen it time after time.
Well, there's no doubt. There's no doubt. I mean, we see guys who, yeah, it's the draft all year long. That's all they do. This guy's number one, and then 2 weeks before the draft, he's number four. And it's like, well, what did you see now that you didn't see 6 months ago when you're studying? Right? So that's where, yes, it's a little bit of hearsay, whatever else. There's certainly some out there that do a lot of good work. There's no doubt about that. But hey,
But here's the problem.
Yeah,
Let me just say this.
Go ahead.
Let me say this.
Yeah.
The guys who don't know what they're doing, but who are in the business and respected,
right,
they put ideas in the heads of guys who declare early when they shouldn't sometimes.
That's for real, right? And we talk about this, like, I like Marvin Harrison Jr. a lot. He's really good. It's not his fault he's been put on this pedestal the way he is, right? You know, it's not. He got built up by some people that made some qualifying statements, I think, that shouldn't have quite gone there. Generational, blah, 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 right? All that type of stuff. He is really good. I don't want to get that wrong. And, you know, I think when you're Marvin Harrison Jr., you went to Ohio State, there's a lot of public backing behind that too, right? The stats match up. They're one of the top teams. So people just go, well, he's got to be one of the top receivers. But he does a lot of good things. He's got great size. He is a good route runner. But he is not the physical specimen that either LSU guy is, Mike. Brian Thomas Jr., the other guy that I have number two on my list. And, again, why I put them – and separate from a guy like Marvin Harrison Jr. is purely separation. They can run away and run by anybody, and what they can do with the ball in their hand is special. Marvin Harrison Jr. is really good, but he's not the freak of nature those other two LSU guys are, and I think you'll see Brian Thomas Jr.'s name continue to climb the list as well, Mike, and be a top 12, top 15 pick.
We got to take a break. We're going to continue the conversation about Chris's, not mine, Chris's
email Florio
draft rankings when PFT Live continues right after this. There's Marvin Harrison Sr. carrying Marvin Harrison Jr. after the Colts won Super Bowl 41. We're going to circle back to Brian Thomas, the guy who's number two on Chris Sims' receiver draft ranking list. Marvin Harrison Jr., and, you know, we talked about how he was built up. I mean, just the fact that his name is Marvin Harrison Jr.
Exactly.
is an extra sure. impediment. Think about yourself.
I'm Chris Sims. I hear you. I know. Right.
Take it a step farther. If you had been Phil Sims Jr., that's another
Maybe.
Layer of expectation
right.
and hype.
Yes. No, I think there's all that. Now, I don't, this is where I hate doing rankings. This is not an indictment on this player. Player's damn good. All right. There's not a lot of weakness to his game at all, really, right? He's got great size, right? He understands how to attack leverage and use body language to get open, right? His ability to play through contact, people grabbing him, you know, boxing them out as he's going to catch a go route down the sideline and using his body to shield the defender from the ball. He is top-notch with all that, you know. Of course, runs well. His ability to kind of weave through traffic as a ball carrier is impressive. But the bottom line is he can't just line up and dominate cornerbacks with speed. Like here, Mike, you know, he doesn't necessarily run by people. He almost looks for the back shoulder more times than not because he knows. And you're not going to see slants for 70 yards and stuff like that, right? So I don't think he can just line up and dominate the top corners in football with just speed and explosiveness. That would be the big thing, right? And he doesn't separate like the other two guys. But damn, he is really good. He's going to be able to do it all. He's he knows how to attack leverage and things like I talked about, but it's not the crispest route running. His ability to just plant the foot in the ground and explode out, it's not that of the LSU guys, right? But ultimately, really awesome player. Jump ball is going to be really good, all of that. But it's the explosive playmaking ability that he doesn't have that the LSU guys have, Mike.
It's going to be interesting to see whether or not this takes root and whether or not it's reflected and manifested in the way the draft plays out, because it's been presumed for so long.
Yeah.
He's going to be the first player taken who isn't a quarterback. Maybe that won't be the case. And maybe the fact that you're kind of, you know, tapping on the ice causes it to break, and folks out there who just assumed it was going to be him aren't going to be as shocked if, when we get to the draft, it's not him as the first receiver taken. We'll see. We're going to talk more receivers when PFT Live continues right after this. We spent the whole break talking about the Marvin Harrison Jr. reality, and you see the clip of him not blowing by people, and Chris sees in the LSU receivers the ability to just blow by people. That's what makes a receiver special. We already talked about Malik Nabers. Tell me more about what you've seen in Brian Thomas Jr.
Yeah, he's the guy, like Mike, I think he would have been the star of the combine if it weren't for Xavier Worthy, right, who ran the 4.21. But Brian Thomas, at 210 pounds, ran 4.33, and his 10-yard split, right, is right there with Xavier Worthy at 50 pounds heavier, basically. Right, this guy, to me, it's A.J. Brown with maybe another rocket up his butt when you talk about it. He runs by everybody. And his ability to run routes and all of that, right, it's not always clean, but you see enough to go, whoa, he can stick his foot in the ground and be really precise and sharp with what he does. His ability to catch jump balls down the field, incredible, right? you know, size, speed, twitchiness, you know, no-brainer as far to me as a top 10, top 15 pick when you talk about it. You know, so it's all of that stuff and the ability to blow by DBs and then the ability to catch physical catches down the football field and then the ability to make special plays with the ball in his hand after the catch. That's what, to me, separates the two LSU guys from a Marvin Harrison Jr., who's really good and, you know, maybe been a little bit built up on a pedestal and done a lot of good things. But, hey, again, here's what I'll say. When you tell me generational talent, receiver, I should turn on the film and go, oh, he's unguardable. You can't block by him. That's Calvin Johnson. That's Randy Moss before he had the off-the-field stuff, right? Ja'Marr Chase, you turned it on. He went, oh, my gosh, he runs by every. That's what that guy is. Marvin Harrison Jr. is not that, right? And that's where the LSU guys have a chance to be special. You want to hit on Roma Dunze real quick? Should I hit on that?
To that point, let me just say this. I saw Calvin Johnson's last game at Georgia Tech in what used to be the Gator Bowl,
right?
Jacksonville against West Virginia.
Yeah.
He was unstoppable. I saw both him and Larry Fitzgerald against West Virginia.
Right.
And the only way to stop those guys is to get to the quarterback.
Larry Fitzgerald's another one. Exactly right.
Half of both
Larry Fitzgerald, but another name I should have thrown in there. Exactly. It's inevitable. You just go, he gets open, he goes by everybody, right? Now, Romo Dunze, okay, he's got a little bit of the Marvin Harrison Jr. thing. Awesome route runner. Like, incredible. Great instincts. Good size. Adjust to the body. I mean, precise in route running. But the lack of explosion and separation is not in the class of the LSU guys. He's a little bit more Keenan Allen-ish, let's say, right? That's how I look at Romo Dunze. Love him. Want him on your team, right? But not going to strike the fear of God into defensive coordinators like Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas Jr. are. Because those are the kind of guys where they go, whoa, I mean, their releases off the line of scrimmage are incredible. And they can score from anywhere, anytime, any place. And that, to me, is what makes them special as compared to the rest of the group.
You want to be that guy that commands double coverage everywhere you go and still beats it
exactly
when it happens.
Right.
Take a break and wrap up this Tuesday edition of PFT Live right after this.
Okay. Okay.
Usually when uniforms get leaked early, it's somebody got their eyes on it and they put it on social media. This was Cal McNair posting it on Reddit, I think. And the next thing you know, the Texans tweeted it. Cal dropping bombs on Texans Reddit. There's the new jerseys. Look, I will go ahead and preemptively say get off my lawn with these numbers. Why do the numbers have to be non-traditional? Why can't we just have block numbers? The best uniforms in the NFL have block numbers, and these are looking a little like, look, this is the Nikeification of the NFL. All these uniforms are looking the same. There's only so many different things you can do, Chris.
Yeah, I know.
There's only so many different things you can do with uniforms.
I do like the adjustment, though. I do. They took some of the red. I like the clean-looking uniform. I will say that, you know. The little thing around the shoulder is cool. I like that they've made the red kind of just like a background thing instead of being so in your face.
And then they've got their battle red uniforms, their battle red helmet. I love their red helmet.
Yeah.
I just like the Raiders and the Packers.
Hey, old man, get off my lawn, old man River.
Get off my lawn.
Hey, back in my day, they had big blocks of numbers.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.